It's Food Friday. Thanks for being with us. A bottle of wine can seem like a great gift. It's classy and thoughtful. But trying to pick one out of the store can be daunting. It feels like there's this endless variety of reds and whites from all over the world, and it can be hard to tell what the differences are and which ones anybody might like. The same is true for navigating an extensive wine list at a nice restaurant or an upscale bar, you know, or a not so upscale bar. It's just not easy to be an informed consumer on this front. Reed Joseph, though, is here to help. He's the beverage director at the Tasting Room of Monona and an expert on wine, beer, and spirits. Reed, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
Most wine drinkers have like some basic sense of a category they like. That might be dry reds or semi-sweet whites, or maybe just like, I'll take a red or white. I mean, where do we start to try to separate the differences, even at the most basic level?
I think that with wine, a lot of people overcomplicate it because the wine industry can overcomplicate it. The easiest way I like to try to demystify wine for people is that at the end of the day, when you're looking at all the different names of wines, most of those are just the different grapes they're made out of. And that's a little, it's a very basic detail that I think a lot of people somehow missed when, you know, they started drinking wine. But like, if you go to the grocery store and you're in the apple section and you're like, I don't like Red Delicious, but I do like Honeycrisp, that's the same mindset with, you know, getting wine. Cabernet Sauvignon, that's just one of the grapes. Merlot, that's just one of the grapes. And figuring out what wine you like, the first part is, hey, I know I like this grape. I know I like the way it tastes. I'm going to keep enjoying the thing I like. Like, there's a zillion details below that, but that's kind of the foundation I like to start with.
I'm going to take your metaphor and torture it a little bit.
Excellent.
You gave us Honeycrisp and Red Delicious, but is liking white or reds similar to that? Is it similar to Granny Smith apples and Red Delicious? Like, how do you know if you like whites, or you're going to like all whites?
Most wine is going to drop into either the black grape category or the white grape category. They make red wine out of black grapes. They make white wine out of white grapes. The color from red wine comes from sitting on the skins, though. So all grape juice is going to come out clear. With red wine, they take those black grapes, they let the wine sit on the skins. That develops the flavors in a different way. That being said, though, it's not like one is inherently better than the other. They just present differently. There's a saying I like to use at my bar, which is the only wrong way to drink is if somebody else tells you you have to drink. So if you're out there and you're like, hey, I like this wine with that food, and someone's like, that's not allowed, like, you can kindly tell that person to be quiet.
Excellent. I do love permission to tell someone to pipe down. Now is the time to join our conversation with Reed Joseph at 800-642-1234. On this Food Friday, we're talking about wine, and we want to know what questions you have. Do you find it hard to know what to order or what to buy at the store? Maybe you actually know a lot about wine and you have a really specific question that you want to try to stump Reed with. He's game. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Reed, some wines that are labeled as a single variety, like a Cabernet, they're actually partial blends and not purely the grape that they're labeled. So you just walked us through this kind of differentiation between the grapes, and now there are some of those additional layers. How does that work, and how can we tell what we're actually going to get?
The short version is it's really hard. In the United States, the laws about making wine are not as strict as they are in the European Union. So if you're buying a bottle and it says Cabernet Sauvignon, legally it has to be a minimum of 75% Cabernet Sauvignon. The rest can be any other grape they put in. Different, you know, wine regions are trying to lift that up a little bit, make it a little bit more stringent. But it makes being an informed consumer difficult. A great sign if you're trying to get high-quality wine is you want to know where it came from. So if you pick up a bottle of wine and it says Red Wine California, that's any number of grapes from anywhere across, you know, a massive state like California. On the other hand, if you pick up a bottle of wine and on the back it says 20% Cab, 80% Merlot from Napa Valley, you know a lot more specifically about that. Deciphering wine labels is one of the most frustrating things, you know, even so for myself, and you can imagine more so for the average consumer. But if you get to the point where you can at least look at a bottle and say, okay, I at least know that's a place, like a one specific place, like that's a great start. A lot of bottles will also tell you exactly what's going into it. And at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with picking a bottle of wine and pulling your phone out and Googling it and saying, hey, if this little thing I found online says it's made of this. And, you know, that takes an extra minute in the aisle that I'm usually happy to spend.
Where do you recommend people start if they really just don't know?
The best way to start is to find a bar with a fun wine list and make friends with the bartender. Make yourself
going.
A regular at a bar with a fun wine list. And proper nerds will not shut up about the thing they're nerdy about. And so if you go to, I can think of a couple of really fun wine bars around town, or like bars with good bartender culture. Shameless plug for the tasting room, of course. But if you go to a bar with a fun wine list and you get to talk into the bartender and, you try different things, that's a great way to have an actual person explain, hey, you should try this because I like it and this is why I like it, rather than what somebody on liquor.com wrote, 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I imagine while you're in the Madison area, there are bartenders like that and places like that all over the state of Wisconsin and certainly beyond that would be willing to listen when someone says, I actually don't know very much about this. Can you give me some advice? Fair to ask, or should we be afraid to be judged?
No. And this, I think that a great sign of a bad bartender is one that doesn't really want to engage with you and have a conversation. I think a bartender that doesn't want to demystify all of the things going on behind the bar, that to me just reeks of insecurity. And so a good bartender is going to be like, yeah, absolutely, let me help you out with this, because it's fun. It's really enjoyable and fulfilling walking somebody through and showing them something new and watching them enjoy it and come back for more.
And what if I'm that's good advice for if I'm drinking a glass or want to try a couple when I'm out and about. But what if I'm walking into the wine aisle and I don't know where to start? Depending on where I'm shopping, there might not be somebody who is super informed who might be able to help me at the level that bartender might be able to.
My go-to for people is start with Italy and France. They're both ridiculously massive wine industries, and it's really complicated, but there are some buzzwords in wine and some styles that have been very popular to the point where now the price becomes inflated because people think it's supposed to be popular. It's supposed to be expensive. On the other hand, there's small, tiny regions in places like, Italy and France that make these wines that you can buy a bottle for $10 and it's going to outperform a $40 bottle of California red. And I'm a lot happier if I buy a $10 bottle of wine and it doesn't turn out great. That hurts a lot less than if I buy a $40 or $50 bottle and it doesn't turn out great. So I generally say go to the France and Italy aisle and look at the incredible array of all of the things, and don't be intimidated by how many things there are, and just pick up a bottle in the $10 to $15 range. And if you like it, look at the label and say, I'm going to try that again next time.
Are there certain characteristics that are common in wines produced in those different countries? You've tossed out, France and Italy, or even Spanish wines.
There are, and this is where you're going to get into. I'm going to try not to get too nerdy on this. You're going to get into the difference between the grapes that are used, the way the winemaker wants to make the wine, the traditional historical style of the wine from that region, and also the environment. There's this word in the wine world called terroir, and terroir is this very, very large word because it encompasses the climate, the geography, the precipitation, the altitude, the kind of the soul of the region where the wine is made. And if you've had a French Pinot Noir versus a California Pinot Noir, you're going to get a very different flavor, and that's terroir. So yeah, there's going to be some things you'll notice about maybe northern French wine or southern French wine, and some things you notice about southern Italian wine. And piecing apart how much of that is traditionally wine from that region is made this way and how much of it is the climate encourages it, that's a moving target.
If I'm not overly familiar, will I notice those nuances when I try the wines?
Probably not.
I think that makes it safer, though, for me,
And uh-huh. This goes back to... I think a lot of people in the wine industry try to make the wine industry complicated. And I don't know why that is. If I was being cynical, I would say it's because, the wine industry sometimes struggles. And if you make your job feel important, then you might make yourself feel a little bit more secure. But your average person is not going to tell the difference between a expensive wine or a cheap wine. I would say like once you go above $6, $7, then the wine is probably going to be pretty decent, especially for imported European wines. One of my favorite studies, this is done a long time ago, but self-described sommeliers or wine experts were, you know, given a red wine to try and a white wine to try and asked to describe the tasting notes. And they described the red as being dark fruit and rich and the white as being light and crisp. And it turns out it was the same white wine, just one had food coloring. So you know, people can be fooled. You have to drink a lot of wine and really get down into the weeds in it before you're debating about, you know, left bank versus right bank Bordeaux. I might have just angered a bunch of wine nerds by saying that, but if you're looking for a good bottle of wine for a Friday night, that's generally you shouldn't be worried about the details.
That's good to know. We've got tasting room of Monona beverage director Reed Joseph here for Food Friday. He's helping us with some tips for beginners to make wine more approachable, from the driest reds to the sweetest whites, everything in between. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How much do you know about the wine that you drink? How do you pick the bottle or the glass? Do you sometimes find wines hard to navigate? Or do you feel pretty confident and want to share some tips? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Still time for your call as we continue talking about wine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. It's Food Friday, and we're on a journey to better understand wine and make that extensive wine list at a bar or a restaurant more approachable. Reed Joseph is our guest. He's the beverage director at the Tasting Room of Monona. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. I want to welcome Bill in Burlington. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I don't have anything contrary at all to what your guest has offered, but maybe some additional. One is to shop your local liquor store that has a lot of wine bins, because typically there'll be an expert there, and you can talk about what you want to do with it, whether it's drinking standalone or you're going with a meal. And if you're introducing yourself to it, it's kind of nice to get together with some friends and maybe try some budget-wise, compare palettes, and find out where it's going from. The other dimension is I'm a hobbyist winemaker. I have about 160 vines, mostly Minnesota hybrids, and so there are wines being grown in Wisconsin and commercially sold that are great, that are worth trying. And if your wine bug goes deeper, you can often get kits to make wine to see if you like to do it, and that's another way to explore styles. At the home level.
Very interesting, Bill. Thank you so much for sharing. And a very fun thing that you do. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely right. And I'm going to give a shout out to two of my personal favorite liquor stores, Riley's Wines of the World on Gorham Street and then Star Liquor on Willie Street. You know, both of them have very fun, very interesting selections and, you know, staff who really like showing people what's going on. I also like to buy wine from Woodman's too because it's convenient. But if I'm hunting for something fun, I'm probably going to a place where I can have a conversation with somebody who is able to help me, again, further demystify it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, we do have this posted on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So those recommendations are out of the Madison area. But if you have a great place that you like to go, you're welcome to share that with us on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can just leave a comment for us and we'll check it out. We have another caller. Scott from Green Bay wants to join us here. Hey, Scott.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I just want to say my wife and I really enjoyed sampling wines. And so we started with a wine club. But then we ended up creating a spreadsheet and tracking all of our wines on the spreadsheet and repeats and what we ate with it and such. But and any comment that we may have about the wine that we had. So I think our spreadsheet is well over 800 bottles long now. But one of the things we noticed is how we progressed from like a sweeter white wine up towards the drier reds, which is kind of our favorite now. So I was wondering if you had any comment about how people progress through wines, starting from where they start and where they end up.
Yeah, Scott, and I'm going to let Reed respond, but I want to let you know that he got quite a big smile. The corners of his eyes crinkled when you started to explain that you had a wine spreadsheet. So I want to make sure that you know that Reed appreciates your effort, Scott. Reed, what about this idea that we kind of sometimes get into sweeter wines and then develop and change our tastes over time?
First of all, I love spreadsheets, so thank you, Scott. You sound like a guy right after my own heart. I think that's not just true of wine. I think it's true of a lot of things. I think that a lot of people, like take coffee, for example. A lot of people, when they start drinking coffee, they start with lattes or mochas, and especially if they're drinking good coffee, eventually take out, you know, the added ingredients until they're sipping on straight black coffee or espresso. And with wine, I could say with cocktails or with any other, you know, thing you get into, getting into the approachable stuff is a great way to start. And then once you get used to that, you know, digging deeper and trying something outside your comfort zone, you know, I didn't think I liked red wine, you know, for years because I was just trying kind of the cheapest sweet red wines. And then I started trying wines that were maybe a little bit more developed, a little bit more character, and realized, oh, I actually really enjoy these. And then that rabbit hole just doesn't really stop. You wind up with 800 bottles in your spreadsheet.
Right. Well, I think Scott understands that very well. What about sparkling wines? We've talked about red wines and white wines. And sometimes I feel like sparkling wines have, you know, a bit of a reputation of their own.
Sparkling wines can be tricky because, you know, there's all these memes about the Champagne region of France. And a lot of people will then on the flip side, you know, kind of take a rhetorical hammer to American sparkling wines. And the thing with sparkling wine, I think, that might make it a little bit less complicated is that every region is going to have kind of their own way of doing it. The French way, where, you know, they take a little bit of the yeast and they bottle it and then they reseal it. And then the wine continues to ferment inside the bottle. And that's where a lot of the bubbles come from. Like that's a way of doing it. It's a very popular way of doing it. And if you pick up a bottle of sparkling wine and you see Method Traditionnel or Champagne Method, like that's going to give you a clue that, hey, this wine is made in the style of Champagne, even if it's not from the Champagne region. But then there's other wines like Cava from Spain, where they add the yeast to allow it to ferment, but then they put it in these large racks and, you know, let it, you know, rotate it in big batches. And so a Cava and Champagne use different grapes. But for a lot of people, a great way to start getting into sparkling wine is through Cava, because you can find Cava sometimes at a less intimidating price point than you can find Champagne. The kind of, to me at least, the bottom rung is when you see things like force carbonated wines, where they basically take a very dry white wine and they add CO2 to it like you would a soda. And that's, you know, that's the stuff that's $5 a bottle. And, you know, that's the stuff that is not, it's going to be there for your Instagram reel, not for you to sip on.
Different purposes for different beverages. That's good to know. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's sparkling wine it's a really fun rabbit hole for me personally. It was kind of one of the first styles that my wine mentor really helped me get into. For anybody in the Madison area, the tasting room is doing a tasting on sparkling wine next Tuesday at 5 in the afternoon, which will be really fun for me because then I get to, you know, nerd out for like an hour and a half on sparkling wine. So like anytime I get to go further down the hole is fun for me. But as a rule of thumb, that word Method Traditionnel or Champagne Method is, you should see that as like a big signpost of, hey, try me, because even if I'm not from Champagne, I'm going to be made properly.
Great. Thanks for the tip. We're talking with Reed Joseph, who's walking us through the wine list, helping better equip us to find the bottle that's best for us. And we are taking calls. We've got Ruth Ann in Madison, who is ready to talk with us about wine. Hey, Ruth Ann.
Hi. I was wondering what, I like really dry red wines, and I'm wondering if there are any organic ones that you recommend. And I have a second question about sometimes a Cabernet, for example, or a Merlot, whatever, will sometimes leave a really awful taste in my mouth, and then other times it doesn't. And I'm wondering why that might be.
Thank you so much, Ruth Ann. We appreciate your call. What do you think, Reed?
As far as the awful taste in your mouth, my guess would be poorly developed tannins. And that's a lot of words that don't make sense to like a maybe he doesn't know, but like the thing about wine where it sits on your tongue, kind of like tea does, that's you know what they call tannins. It's one of the compounds that comes out of the skins when you're making red wine. And in the same way that, again, using coffee an example, some dark French roast coffee is really bitter in a charcoal way, and some dark black coffee is very bitter in a pleasant way. Sometimes the red wine, especially when you give really heavy grapes like Cabernet Sauvignon, the way the tannins sit, it just lingers. It's like kind of like you took a bite of drywall. And, you know, sometimes when you have better developed tannins, that doesn't happen. One of the factors is age. As the wine ages in the bottle, it might, you know, it's going to develop a little bit more and those tannins will be softer. Maybe how the wine was stored, if it, you know, maybe got a little too hot or too cold, then some of the acidity might be coming out a little bit more. I guess I'm trying to think through, like, the last time I had a wine that I took a sip and I was just like, you know, had to wash my mouth out with soap afterwards. But as far as organic wines, there are a lot of great organic wineries, and they'll usually tell you on the bottle. The wine industry in general is moving more in the direction of organic, what they call biodynamic, you know, more general, more sustainable farming and winemaking practices. And so when a wine is made organic, they'll let you know. We have a couple of organic wines on our list, but that's usually when somebody brings in the wine and it's organic, it's the first thing out of their mouth. And so, you know, pick up a couple of bottles, and if it's organic, it'll have a big sticker on the back letting you know.
Excellent. Probably worth a try if that's the kind of wine that you're looking for. Also, again, if you see an organic wine on a list that you could buy by the glass, try it out that way first.
Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite ways to find wine is, you know, I'll try a glass of it and then go and, you know, buy that bottle somewhere I think I can find it. Mm-hmm. The little bit of inside baseball on this is most restaurants price their wine where the price of the glass is what you pay for the bottle wholesale. And they do that so that if somebody buys one glass and then maybe they don't serve that wine for the next couple of days, they can pour the bottle of wine out and at least they recoup their cost. So if you're at a restaurant and you try your wine and it's $14 a glass and it's excellent, you can probably find that wine somewhere for $15, $16 a bottle.
Excellent. These are perfect tips, Reed. I feel like I am more equipped to walk into the weekend now. I want to say thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Reed Joseph is the beverage director at the Tasting Room of Monona. He was with us on this Food Friday to teach us about wine, make us a little more informed consumers of our favorite reds and whites. And again, we've got this posted on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So if you'd like to contribute and continue the conversation, that's where you can go. This is Central Time.